9:34. Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN. Joined by Dr. Kevin Most, Chief Medical Officer, Northwestern Central DuPage Hospital. Kevin, good morning. Nice to have you on with us, as always.
Good morning, Dean. How are you guys doing up there?
We are doing fine. We were just talking a couple of minutes ago about COVID-19 and baseball and whether they're going to finish the season out. I guess the latest coming out of Milwaukee, 4 more positive coronavirus tests in the Cardinals organization. A tweet yesterday from David Stearns, who is the president of baseball operations with the Milwaukee Brewers, that Lorenzo Cain has informed them that he will not be participating in the remainder of the 2020 season, apparently for fear of, a pretty huge chance that every precaution is being taken and that the spread of the virus is so high. What's your take on spread of the virus playing a game of baseball?
Yeah, baseball, unfortunately, is a canary in the coal mine for us. You know, you look at a sport where you can essentially physically distance for a good portion of the game, and if you were smart, you could physically distance even in the dugouts, and yet they're having these high positivity rates while still trying to stay somewhat in pods or herds. So this certainly is the concern as we look at the next sports coming out. You look at sports like hockey, football, basketball, where there is a lot more face-to-face, close interactions, yelling, grunting, spitting. You know, those are going to be the concerns. And baseball, like I said, it's canary in the coal mine. It's going to be the first indicator of how we're going to come out of this in other organized sports.
Now, I was watching some of the games, as I was mentioning to Jordan a few minutes ago, and watched the players in the dugout without masks on. That seems like a fairly confined space, even though it's outdoors, with no masks, guys talking to each other, high-fiving when they do something great on the field. That doesn't seem safe to me.
It doesn't at all. I mean, and they define the definition of CDC of close contact of, within 6 feet for 15 minutes. A baseball game's 2.5 hours. Those individuals in the dugout actually should be one of two places. They shouldn't even be in the dugout. They don't really add value in the dugout themselves. They could be, distanced somewhere else in the clubhouse and brought on if needed, and just have the coaches and scouts or whoever needs to be in the dugout at that time instead of potentially exposing more players. So they certainly should, if they're going to be, should all be masked in the dugout. Because like I said, you look at those dugouts and 6 feet, 15 minutes, you're talking they're going to get it. And it's not like they're sitting in their own seat. They're moving around. So all you need is one super spreader and he's going to infiltrate an entire team.
Yeah, Jordan, is there any reason that the players could not be spread out along the first and third baselines?
There's one thing that I have seen the teams are doing, which is that some of the teams are allowing players that are not actively playing to either sit in some of the seats that are not being used by the fans.
Right. Of course, yeah.
Or they, the bullpen is spread out more. But even if you think about Wrigley Field, right, they redid the bullpens that are under the bleachers, but those are enclosed indoor spaces. And even if they're all sitting apart, in theory, wouldn't they all be, I'll ask the doctor, wouldn't they all be inside and spreading that air enough that if somebody had it, that they would all be in danger?
Yeah, without masks on, Jordan, you're absolutely right. That still is an enclosed space as you watch it on the camera when they show the players warming up. So, in that situation, and Dean, you hit it right on the head, you've got 50,000, 30,000 empty seats. Let's spread the players out. Let's show the public this is what we're doing for the players' safety. You can see that they're physically distanced at this time. They could still talk to each other from 12 feet away. None of the fans are yelling. They could still do their encouragement, probably even better and safer than they could. And Jordan, your point of view, that pitcher and catcher, all right, they're going to go warm up. They go out there. They're the only two. They're 80 feet away from each other and, should have no problem whatsoever. So, I think they're going to look back at this and say, we had a couple missteps. and they have a very small window of changing it before the season gets called, in my opinion.
Yeah, when we were talking about this before, a couple of scenarios came up. You know, guys who are at their bases or at their positions in the field, you know, they're certainly socially distanced enough. But as action starts to happen and you got a guy sliding into first base, you know, one guy sliding head first into another guy guarding the base, isn't there some potential for danger there?
Sure. Sure, there is. But it's a very short period of time. You know, it happens in a split second. But that absolutely would be a risk. Now, Dean, take that situation that you just discussed there and now bring it to a football field,
right,
where you have five offensive and defensive linemen lining up against each other every 30 seconds and going at it just like those baseball players. So like I said, canary in the coal mine, if we start to see this spread, you know, we can trace it back saying, boy, this guy had it. He slid into second base. The shortstop was there. 3 days later, the shortstop got it. That will be the end of football season as we know it, and basketball as well.
Yeah, I brought up the scenario also of a ball that's being touched by lots of different people. I mean, I know they do change the ball occasionally for a variety of reasons, but, you know, the pitcher throws the ball to the catcher throws it to first base, you know, the ball gets tossed around. Isn't there a chance that virus could live on that baseball? Some people on the text line said I'm overreacting and, oh, come on, you know, the virus couldn't live on the ball. But, you know, if I'm wrong, you know, great. I hope I am wrong.
Yeah, I mean, theoretically, the virus could live on the ball. Is it going to be at a level high enough? And, again, that ball is going to be hit, thrown, whatever, caught in a mitt. Boy, I touch it with my hand, and now I have to take my hand and put it to my mouth or face. So, you know, I'm sure the players are being told be very aware of touching your face at all times here. And, you know, the talking into the mitt, you know, I'm sure that they're really being careful about some of those things. But like Jordan said, some of the obvious things, let's spread them out in the dugout. I mean, we could be concerned about the ball, but boy, let's take something as simple that we can control quickly and spread them out into these, you know, first row seats or fifth, you know, fifth row seats, and give them some space there and protect the individuals in the dugout who are at much higher risk than those on the field.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly right. It's going to be very interesting, both for Major League Baseball and, as Kevin said, how this will affect hockey and football. And, you know, as you know, if kids are going to be going back to school, are they going to be playing sports? Are they going to be, you know, doing things that could potentially be dangerous? I think we're entering a very, you know, interesting time with all of this, of what we're calling the new normal. So let me see here. 1,639 new COVID-19 cases in the state of Illinois, 8 more deaths reported 1 day after 11 counties in Illinois put on warning levels for resurgence. Things are not looking great here in the state of Illinois, are they, Kevin?
No, they really aren't. And if you look at the map, you can see that the counties that we're concerned about in the St. Louis area, as well as down near Evansville and Springfield, you know, here up in, you know, Cook County, let's see, I can tell you right now, we are for Cook County. Cook County, we're looking at a 5.4% positivity rate. You know, 2 weeks ago, we were, you know, creeping closer to 4 and in the high 3s. But some of these counties in the St. Louis area where they're at 8.5%, 11%, you know, the overall, it's bringing up the overall rate of the state, you know, well above that 4% rate that we're concerned about. But really, we're starting to see pockets, and I'm afraid you're going to start to see more of these counties change from being at target to being, you know, in the governor's words, you know, the warning sign. And it would not surprise me if this continues to spread that we start to see some clamping down again.
So what needs to be done to, you know, try to stem this? And, you know, I guess we have to go back to trying to flatten the curve.
It is, Dean. It's. I'm afraid it's complacency. I'm afraid it is, we have conquered this, we're going to do fine. You know, we're hearing all this about, we don't have to be worried about kids, and yet I'll say, no, we definitely do have to be worried about kids. But I think it's complacency. I'm starting to see more and more people, you know, with masks around their chin or, you know, no masks at all. So Holding everybody true to it, and I would say right now, if I was a family member with a kid that's trying to make a decision of whether to go to school or school at home, man, define your pod and really be careful there, because I'm afraid school's really going to at least start to have some ramp up as well.
Yeah, you think that masks are playing that big of a factor in the resurgence, huh?
Absolutely. And a study that just came out, we've been touting masks as being the way that the asymptomatic individual protects others from him or her. A study just came out last week that showed, boy, not only does it do that and does it well, it actually does protect us almost regardless of the mask. Bandanas, not so much, but any other mask that is kind of form-fitting around the face, doesn't have to be an N95. The study showed that, boy, it is going to decrease the possibility, because the amount of viral load that would have to get through that mask is minuscule and difficult to cause infection. So we've been touting it all because we know we could test to see how much we protect others. Now we have the study that shows, boy, this actually protects you as well, which should be really encouraging to people.
Yeah, the more layers, the better, really, when it comes to masks, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you get a good 3-layer mask, that's great. You know, people say, well, if 3 is good, then 9 is going to be better. It'll be difficult to breathe, and actually you'll end up breathing more around the sides of it, and you'll find that it's not comfortable. So if you could find a good 3-4-layer mask, that's probably going to be ideal for both protecting you from others as well as protecting yourself.
Yeah, you were talking about asymptomatic people with COVID. The 630 area code says, how does a person who is asymptomatic pass on COVID disease?
If you don't have any symptoms,
how are you passing it on?
Correct. So you can have the virus living in the back of your throat that hasn't gotten to a point where it gets into your cells and causes all the problems, the immune response to that. So a perfect example I'll give you is something like chicken pox, right? Everybody knows about shingles. Boy, I'm going to make sure I protect it against shingles. Well, why? We're not getting exposed to chickenpox, but we know the chickenpox virus is living in most of our bodies right now. So the virus can stay and live and replicate without causing symptoms. And unfortunately, this one likes to stay in the back of the nose and the back of the throat. So that asymptomatic person, when talking loudly, cheering, screaming, is spewing that viral and at decent viral loads. As we're looking at these adolescents and teens, of how much virus they're expelling without having symptoms. So it's just that the body hasn't seen it as foreign, and it says, hey, I can live with this for a while.
Yeah, some people will be able to be more asymptomatic than others, in other words.
Asymptomatic and also pre-symptomatic. You know, I spread it day 2 through 5, and I did not have any symptoms at all. Am I asymptomatic? Or on day 6, when I get a fever, cough, and shortness of breath, was I pre-symptomatic? Mm. Either one of those is going to be a time when you're shedding a lot of virus, which, again, highlights the importance of masks.
Yeah, it just would be a lot simpler if people protected themselves and were kind enough to protect others from what they may be coughing around, spitting around, and not even knowing it. 950, Dean Richards, Sunday morning, WGN. Talking everything COVID-19 with Dr. Kevin Most, Central DuPage Hospital. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Bill, you're on WGN. Are you there, Bill? Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm right here.
Go right ahead.
Okay. I want to thank you and the doctor for the valuable weekly information. I greatly appreciate that. I want to talk about the elephant in the room for a second. The effect of the mass nationwide protests that are having on the spike of the COVID. Obviously, there are many who are not wearing masks, marching shoulder to shoulder, screaming, doing all the things we're not supposed to be doing. Doctor, can you explain the severity of that has on the spike, please? And I will hang up and listen.
All right, Bill, thank you for the call. And let me just say, I mean, this was a question that Congressman Jim Jordan placed to Dr. Fauci trying to get him to talk about the protests. And I don't think that's a medical person's I don't think that's the area of expertise, Kevin. I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think the question is, what about people in mass settings going without masks? You know, whether they are protesters, whether they're people who are protecting a Confederate flag, whether they're people going to the beach, whether they're people at a ball game. It really is about people in mass gatherings, isn't it? Not taking the correct precautions, rather than trying to get medical people to comment on the protests that are going on.
Absolutely, you're spot on. And unfortunately, you know, we see these large gatherings, and those are often individuals that don't know each other, whether they're at the beach, whether they're at a protest, whether they're at anything else. And, you know, you have these large gatherings of people that are close together, but outside. If we said, boy, contact, could a super spreader do something? Absolutely. We should actually be more concerned about these smaller groups, you know, in bars or in other social settings where you have the complacency and the people get comfortable and take their masks off in a much more close personal setting. But certainly we know that the virus spreads by droplets. So regardless of where you're at, if you're in a large setting with large number of individuals not wearing masks, the chance of spreading it is definitely going to be elevated, regardless of whether it, you know, it's a sporting event, a concert, a bar, a protest, whatever it is. The science behind it is going to say that virus can go 6 to 8 feet easily. And if you're in direct contact with somebody who coughs, screams, yells at that period of time, your chance of getting the virus goes up.
Yeah, it's as much a chance at a protest where people are yelling and not wearing masks as it is a political convention where people are shouting and not wearing masks. Same thing. It's about not being around other people who are spreading the virus. This is Mike. You're on WGN. Good morning.
Hey, morning, guys. I have a question. So I have a friend, he's at work. He's been, he keeps testing positive for about 28 days. Every time he goes to the doctor, they give him a test and it comes back positive. The doctor released him to go back to work. Is he still contagious or?
And he's still testing positive and the doctor told him it's okay to go back to work?
Yep, it's been about 28 days.
Yep, so not unusual. So what we are seeing is there is a subgroup of people that actually will continue to test positive. And actually, if we tried to grow out that virus, I think in the vast majority, we would find that they don't grow positive. In other words, they still have portions of the virus that is making the test turn positive. But we know that individuals after about day 10 to 14 are going to be asymptomatic and not contagious. So that's the science behind it as we have gotten to see more and more of these individuals. We've had some that have tested positive up to 40 days, and yet they've been totally asymptomatic after the illness but continue to test positive because they have fragments of that virus that is still changing the test to positive, yet they're not contagious at that point. So that's really confusing for a lot of people. Say, wait, I thought the test told us we were positive. Really, you have to look at the timing of the test, the timing of the symptoms, and the timing post-infection. So a lot of science behind this, and we're learning a lot every single day about this.
630 area code, Kevin, says, does swimming pools or water parks spread the virus?
Yeah, you know, the only way swimming pool and water park spread the virus is exactly what we were talking about before. So it's not like it gets into the pool water and you'd be concerned. It's more about if you're on the deck of the pool and you're sitting close to somebody, you're interacting with individuals without wearing a mask. So again, that's an area where you can essentially physically distance. In water parks, you got to be careful because kids obviously will not wear a mask, especially when in the pool, and they still want to interact with other kids. So I'd be kind of careful there. But any place you can physically distance, it has not been shown that it gets in the water. It's not been shown that it's going to be aerosolized more at a pool. So I would not be overly concerned as long as you can distance at that pool.
Since soap is so effective against the virus, can we use a soapy cloth to wipe down our grocery packages since Clorox wipes are scarce?
Yeah, so it's interesting. When we talk about soap and how soap works on our hands, the reason that soap works is soap breaks down the oils on our hand, and then when we rinse the hands, the virus actually comes off. So if we look at alcohol, as soon as it contacts the virus, it kills the virus. So they work in two different ways. Soap breaks down skin, allows the virus to be rinsed off, doesn't actually kill the virus, although many of them say bactericidal, so there are other components in there besides just plain soap. But the main premise of soap is to break down the oils to allow us to rinse whatever toxic material is on our hands, whereas the Cloroxes and the alcohol wipes and the gels, sanitizers, are all alcohol-based, which denature the protein in the virus and kill it immediately.
Here are, let me see here, the 815 area code. I walk in the park. I distance myself when walking past another. Do I still need to wear a mask?
Yeah, you know, right now, until the governor says everyone's wearing a mask anytime they're outside, you know, if you are physically distancing yourself as you walk by others and you really are outside, not in a large group, you are fine. You know, the chance of you getting it walking by somebody, I tell you, I go on a lot of walks, and it's a lot of courtesy right now that people get 10 feet away from each other, and they pass each other. So their definition of contact is minuscule, if anything. One, you're going in two different directions. Two, you've already physically distanced. You have a better exposure in a grocery store, and obviously that's why we wear masks when we're in these environments that we can't control. But outside walking, you are fine. Physically distance, walk by people and give them proper space. And I'll say when people walk right now, we're multiplying that. You know, it's not 6 feet anymore. We're multiplying that by 18 feet, probably 20 feet. People are really getting well outside each other's range just out of courtesy to each other.
And somebody asking, I think you've talked about this in past weeks, do we need to rinse down, wipe down our groceries when we come home from the store?
No, there really has been no cases where it's shown that there's been any transmission of the virus from groceries, from food delivery containers. Now, people that are concerned, fine. You're not going to use your groceries right away. The virus will only live for a short period of time, even on that surface. And touching that surface again, low viral load, how long was it before somebody else touched it and put the virus there, and then you touch in your mouth. So the chance of it is extremely low. If you take your groceries, say, you know what, I'm not going to use these groceries for the next 24 hours, they are very clean and no concern for any COVID on any of those.
Kevin, it's always good to talk to you.